I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All natural ingredients, no preservatives. It's in the refrigerated section at your Holiday Oils, your Mavericks's, and your Costco's's, and where else, Scott?
Your Harmon's's.
Oh, yeah, your Associated Foods.
Smith's's.
Yeah, a handful of Smith's and 7-Eleven's as well.
Yep.
So here's what we're going to do. Just go try one, to be honest. Let's just do it. And next time, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get with the G2G guys, and when we go on the road, and I think we're going to have a couple of remotes at their place. Let's just have people come in and try them, too, man.
Yeah.
We'll do that. All right.
You'll be changed.
It'll change your life.
Change your life.
Let's jump out to the front end of the show here and get into the cut. We're going to talk a little bit of BYU football here with our BYU insider, Mitch Harper, who's fresh off a trip to Eugene. So let's jump in right here with the cut.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The cut presented by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. Mitch Harper, just off of a trip to Eugene, Oregon, where BYU suffered his first loss of the season, 41-20 at the hands of a very good Duck team. Mitch, you took a lot of heat for picking Oregon to win this game. What was the thing that you thought was the real X factor that Oregon was going to get this win and that they ended up getting the win with this week?
It was a must win for Oregon, because had they lost that game, I think everyone would have written them off. Even though, you know, Pac-12 play hasn't started for them, they would have been viewed as a lost season in year one under Dan Lanning. I think the narrative around Dan Lanning's program would have been pretty negative had they lost that game. So Autzen Stadium was as loud as advertised, and they get their 21st, you know, consecutive win at home. And BYU, honestly, that's a loss where you kind of have to reevaluate a lot of things. And it's one where, you know, Oregon's speed was as good as, you know, the recruiting stars would suggest. But what was more surprising was just how physical Oregon was in the trenches, and how they wasn't anything too complex with the way they ran the football. It was just running it down BYU's throat. And I thought that was something that was very surprising, that I did not see coming. And I think that is one of the reasons that leaves you thinking for the defensive side for BYU. They got to go back to the drawing board. They got to go back to the drawing board with the kicking situation. And offensively, they got to figure something out with their ground attack, because that was non-existent. You can't be a one-dimensional team. Jaren Hall is good, and he's great. But he's not. He can't carry you when you're a completely one-dimensional team.
When you talk about a team with a lot of speed, a lot of athleticism, how much then do you think the absence of Puka Nacua played into the game and Gunnar Romney?
I don't think that much, honestly, because I don't think that the outcome changes with those guys there. I mean, Puka, incredible talent when he's healthy. I mean, you guys know that. But I think that, you know, if he's playing, he's dealing with that high ankle sprain still, and he's nowhere near the 100% Puka that, you know, people expect when they saw him in that first quarter against South Florida. And even then, he was still dealing with a hamstring issue that kept him out of a lot of fall camp practices. So I think it could have helped from the simple fact of accounting for him, because Chase Roberts, after that first play from scrimmage, he was pretty much kept in check. And I think that's a testament to maybe what Oregon saw on film with Chase Roberts and realized the type of talent that he has. And I think there's a bright future still ahead, obviously, for Chase Roberts. But when he got zeroed in on and he got on a scouting report, it was not smooth sailing like it was against Baylor. So I think it could have helped, but I don't think it would have drastically changed much. I think BYU would still been dealing with a blowout loss, and that's not common the last few years for BYU. They have been used to getting dealt a, you know, 3-touchdown loss in some time, and I would argue it wasn't even that close until, you know, Oregon pulled Bo Nix in that late third quarter. That gave them the luxury to make it a little bit more respectable on the scoreboard. It was a complete beatdown from start to finish.
That is a wild middle finger to BYU to take out your starting quarterback mid third quarter. I thought that everybody was looking around going, ooh, that was a wild thing to do. Now, I was also thinking about this, and we're going to ask Jaron Hall next hour. He's going to come on for our Players Club weekly appearance that he has with us. And I think that the resetting part is an important deal. And obviously, they want to see what they're made of and how they can respond this week with Wyoming. And they've got a lot of goals still out in front of them. We have the mentality of the sky is falling as fans, you know, typically for teams that we have here. BYU lost 2 games in a row last year after going 5-0, and everybody thought the sky was falling then. How do they rebound and not have a similar situation to last year when they lost to Boise and then they had a similar performance where they were dominated last year by Baylor down in Waco? How do they avoid having a back-to-back loss situation and get back into the winning things?
Well, I think these 2 games are the perfect remedy. You know, Wyoming and Utah State are – you know, Wyoming's a solid opponent. They've surprised. That win over Air Force was I was very surprised by that. I mean, there was buzz, like BYU, about maybe Air Force could be a New Year's Six team, and then they lay an egg in Laramie. You know, but I think that's still the perfect remedy to face a team where you're a 3-touchdown favorite and you're at home. That in and of itself should lend itself to a little bit more confidence. But what's tricky is that, you know, if you don't play well and it's maybe a 10-point win, you go, what is the issues with this team? So you hope that they're executing the way that they did against South Florida, and they dominate a group of five opponent where you're going to have the better talent, you're going to have the better trench play, and you can get some better and get some confidence in that ground attack. I mean, I'll admit, I'm surprised that BYU has struggled with Chris Brooks. I mean, I thought Baylor was one thing. I thought, okay, that's an anomaly. It that happened last year with Tyler Allgeier, but have it happened against Oregon, a team where, you know, again, their physicality was brought into question. Everyone knows about the talent, but the physicality was not respected for the Ducks, and they handled BYU and Brooks and Katoa. They just couldn't get going. And, you know, I still think Chris Brooks is head and shoulders BYU's best running back, and he's the best RB1, but he's got to get going, and he's got to start having some big games again like he did against USF. And you got to have, build momentum into that Notre Dame game. Get these 2 games at home, and then you can really get a confidence boost once again with the program if you can break through and beat an Irish team. Regardless of their record, it's still Notre Dame, and that would be really when you could point to the next measuring stick opportunity to say how much progress has truly been made since Oregon, because these next 2 weeks are kind of a no-win situation where you have to just blow them out, and if you don't blow them out, people will scrutinize it to the high heavens about what went wrong. So they just got to next measuring stick against Notre Dame.
We were looking at this tweet that Pete Thamel sent out about Kalani Sitake a couple days ago. Names for Arizona State: Brian Harsin, Kalani Sitake, Jonathan Smith, Tom Herman, Troy Calhoun, among other names that were just thrown out there. Is Kalani still on that list of on the lookout for another P5, you know, type job, or is going to the Big 12 and the commitment he made to BYU a lifetime deal for him?
I feel that BYU's the spot that he wants to be at, and I think he wants the challenge of leading BYU into the Power 5 ranks. And I think that, you know, I've always felt that outside of Oregon and maybe USC, or definitely USC, those would be the only 2 jobs in the Pac-12 that I think could pull Kalani Sitake away from BYU unless some like $95 million over 10 years. See why he would leave for a job like Arizona State. I think that's a little bit of a reach. And I think it's also an indictment, too, of still BYU, from a perception side of things, is still viewed as that, you know, in the grand picture of college football nationally, it's viewed as a program that is inferior from a resources perspective than, but from a winning perspective, recruiting-wise, Connie can do a better job at BYU. And I think that loving BYU, he's been always been a fan. He makes that a point all the time. I don't see why he would want to leave BYU when they're a member of the Big 12 Conference. It's just
right.
For a place like Arizona State, who has always been the sleeping giant. I mean, outside of Bruce Snyder and Frank Cush, what has Arizona State done? They've never done anything. They've always been the team that comes close, and when they got expectations, they always lay an egg. Like that's I don't see why Arizona State would even be a threat to get Kalani Sitake.
All right, let me throw a school out that maybe would be. So I think I agree with you about Kalani. I think that it's where he went to school, so there's an added incentive. You know, he's an alumni.
Yeah, you feel like they made a deal that was that felt better for him.
Well, and it's a hard, you know, it's a hard school to get a good coach at. You know, because your options are so limited, and he fits there so well. But what about like Utah? Would that? I mean, because you know Kyle was a guy who went to BYU, had a lot of ties there, you know, grew up in Provo and was a great player. His dad coached there, but he left and went to Utah and has been very successful. Could you ever see, because Kyle's not going to coach forever either, and I know that it's probably Morgan Scally that's going to be the heir apparent, but would you ever think he'd go to Utah?
I mean, I think it's always possible because Kalani's always had a deep respect for Utah and still to this day respects him, and I think but I just feel like BYU is a place that now that they are a Power 5 team too, anything Utah can do, BYU can accomplish as well. A couple of years ago or like 24 months ago, that cannot be said. And yeah. I still think that, you know, from a recruiting perspective, Utah still has a deeper pool to go, you know, blow for blow with an occasional Ohio State or USC. BYU's got the tall order of trying to do that more so and make inroads in that front. And I think Kalani – but I think at the same time, Kalani likes kind of just being the CEO at BYU. I mean, you know, when he first got hired on the job, it was all about he's going to open all these doors in recruiting. And I think he has. The construction of the roster, the athleticism, I still think is better than where it was. It's still not to an Oregon level, but it's far better than where it was when he first got there. But I just think that he's enjoying the guy that, you know, he's kind of the closer for BYU. When he gets a recruit to come in, no longer is he doing really the in-home visits, more about meeting him in the office and sealing the deal that way. He's not in the day-in, day-out grind of recruiting. And I think, you know, more so at a place like Utah, maybe there'd be more commitment to that. Who knows? I mean, I think, again, money could talk a lot, and you could maybe still maintain your same living situation. I mean, with Kalani, too, he's got a new baby now. You know, a newborn child in the picture as well, which is not very typical for anyone in his age range. But, you know, a college football coach that would have to uproot and go somewhere else. With Utah, you could have that luxury of staying in the same home. But I think BYU just offers everything he wants. And I think that the leadership is on – they have the same alignment as him, where they want him to succeed. And they're more embracing of athletics more than ever before. If it was an older regime where – you know, athletics were not always the priority. Yeah, I could see that too, even if you were in a Power 5 league being BYU. But I think the leadership for BYU right now is aligned with Kalani, and they want to give him the necessary tools to succeed in the Big 12 Conference, and I think he wants to see that through.
Mitch, what has to happen this week against Wyoming for the – I mean, obviously people look at the tape and they go, hey, they bottled up the best running attack in the entire country.
Yep.
In Air Force, and they get that win. Sure, it was in Laramie, but they're going to come to Provo. Does it feel like a must-win situation for BYU, or is there such a thing anymore when even in the last year of independence, is there such a thing?
It's definitely a must-win because, you know, with this much experience on the roster and, you know, leader in Jaren Hall at quarterback, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting because with BYU, I was having this debate with Matt Biamonte on and our post game, I feel like the New Year's Six and playoff talk is now instantly out of the picture, because had they lost close to Oregon, maybe they'd still be in that conversation. But to get blown out, I think immediately throws BYU out of any sort of New Year's Six contention. So you could argue, really, what is any game a must-win? I still think this is, because you want to show improvement, because I think it's all about, again, building momentum to that Notre Dame game in Vegas, which could be, you know, a network television game, breakthrough opportunity to really try to get yourself back into the national landscape. So I football, don't be too stubborn about it and enforce it to make sure that the you know, ground attack, you have, still have that balanced attack, but they got to get that ground attack going, though. And Chris Brooks, he needs to have some success again, like he did in week one against Wyoming this week. And so I think the running the football and winning by a comfortable margin needs to be the expectation. And I think that's what BYU needs to do for people to feel like that was a successful week as they continue to move forward. Because, again, what happened in Eugene was not pretty, and it was something that they need to reevaluate a lot of what they just did.
We're a quarter of way through the season for BYU. Last week's game for Jaren Hall was, you know, he threw for over 300 yards. But a lot of that may be a little misleading, because really, yeah, BYU, they weren't really in that game ever. What's your assessment of his play so far in the season?
I think without, you know, two of his top receivers, I think he's done a really good job. I think that maybe just, again, the lack of, you know, the big plays through the air have been a little bit surprising to not see that as frequent as maybe you expect. But I think all things considered, with being in two of the three games where it's one-dimensional and you're down to your top two receivers are gone, and I think that I think Jaren Hall has done a really nice job still, and I think that better performances and better games lie ahead for Jaren this season. And, you know, I think it's just what's difficult for Jaren, for BYU, what happened last week was it was a complete missed opportunity. And Kalani used that phrase, too, on his Monday presser. It truly was, because you were talking about validation for almost like 2 years of work could have been culminated in, you know, getting that win at Oregon. I know there's still tons of football to play, but you'd be talking about a BYU team this week and a quarterback as being maybe the big story in college football nationally. And that went by the wayside, and they missed out that chance. And Jaren has to, you know, BYU has to probably put together an amazing run to really have that opportunity again. I know they're still ranked number 19 in the AP top 25 poll, but they're kind of out of sight and out of mind for a while. And that's unfortunate, because Jaren is as gifted of a quarterback as we've seen come through BYU, and with the amount of quarterbacks that have come through that place, they need something. And he's as talented and athletic as they've come at BYU. And it was just a missed opportunity to really highlight how good of a player he is.
Is he running enough, too little, just right? How, because he's a real weapon running the ball. And you talk about this running game.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on how much he's actually used that weapon?
I think it's been, you know, fine. I mean, all of his runs are pretty much coming through scrambles if he does decide to run. I think it's the right approach by Aaron Roderick to not design anything for him. And I think, you know, A-Rod has been true to that. I mean, he talked about it here on the KSL Sports Zone back in fall camp, and he stayed true to that. I mean, you're not seeing many design situations for Jaren to take off, and he is a massive weapon, but I just think he's just too valuable, and you can't risk him getting any sort of hits. And he's taken a lot more hits tonight. Honestly, expected to see Jaren take through 3 weeks, considering the praise and the accolades this offensive line was receiving. And that's a whole other issue. I mean, the offensive line has not lived up to their lofty billing, and that's a big disappointment. I think one of the reasons why BYU had that lackluster performance against Oregon. But I think, yeah, Jaren, I don't think it's worth the risk to put that guy through runs, because you got to have him over the course of the season. Because you lose him, I mean, think about if Jaren's gone, and then you're pairing that up with a running game that's struggling. You know, you're down a couple wide receivers, you're down two defensive ends, you're down a cornerback. I mean, suddenly it's becoming what BYU looked like last year against UAB. And then every game, even Wyoming and Utah State, become a lot riskier proposition. So, yeah, you got to keep Jaren healthy at all costs. And I think it's fine that they're not designing many runs for him.
Mitch, we know that Scott's given away his daughter this week to the bonds of matrimony, and you'll be hosting with me on Friday. Is that still going down?
That is still going down.
Yes. All right. Scott's excited about it. He's all worried about charcuterie boards and dresses and lights for a backyard, so it'll be good to have you focused on there and not have Scott in a million different directions, so I appreciate that.
You bet. I'm happy to do it.
He didn't even know. He's over here. He's like, what? I'm sorry. I was getting a text about the wedding. I got
a lot of things going on this week, all right? My mind's a lot of places.
Mitch Harper. You can hear him. You can hear him, of course, on
the Cougar, RV's fixed. That's
Cougar,
all I know.
That's all that matters. Cougar Sports Saturday and, of course, on KSLSports.com, where he is the best Cougar insider that we have here in the market. Mitch, will chat with you on Friday, man.
All right. See you guys.
There you go. We'll come back. We got more to go here in the program.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.